I'm Michael Schneider of TV Guide Magazine, and this is a special TV Roundtable edition of The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really all white lights,
features
and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
Joining me is my pal Joe Adalian of Vulture.com. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Mike.
And of course, the young and talented AJ Marischal of Variety. Hey, AJ.
Mike and Joe, hello.
So we're going to be talking about three big topics on the agenda today. First off, the fall TV season, which is now upon us. We're also going to be talking a little bit about how we watch what we watch and how audience habits are changing and what's that doing to the entertainment industry. And finally, we're going to tackle the Emmys. So let's start off by talking about fall TV, guys. Another season is upon us. And of course, this is the stage in the game where everything until proven otherwise is a hit. It's a big hit. But of course, we know in a couple of weeks, 80% of those shows are going to fail. Have we learned anything yet? And are things finally changing? What do you think, guys? Joe, is this the year that TV is saved?
Or the year that TV dies. But let's be clear. We're talking about network television versus everything else. Other parts of television are doing okay. Cable television, great. Streaming television, in quotes, doing fine, having a record year. The traditional broadcast TV model is the one that's been being battered for at least 10 years now. And in the last year, it seems to have sped up. It seemed to have gone into hyperdrive, into almost a death spiral. Last year, three out of the four networks debuted down about 25% from the year before. If things going to change, I don't know. They're doing everything pretty much the same way they always have and expecting a different result. I think we know what that's the definition of.
And this year, more than ever, cable is heading right into the eye of the storm. And great shows like Homeland are returning. And I think a good chunk of the shows everyone's excited to see coming back are not on broadcast. AJ, is there anything this fall that you're sort of excited about and think might work?
There were some pilots that I really enjoyed watching, some that I think show some promise for the broadcast sector. I liked a handful of the comedies on Fox. I think Sleepy Hollow is going to be a fun, campy show to keep up with a little bit of fantasy element there. I think that the Michael J. Fox show is a solid get for NBC. But the question that's on a lot of executives' minds is, does fall season even matter at this point? And I know that was something that Kevin Riley brought up at his TCA session. He's pretty forthcoming about his frustration with this, seasonal model of television, fall season, mid-season, and summer. Does that distinction even matter anymore? And, we're at this point where the executives at networks are so frustrated with this model, yet they're kind of just stuck in the mechanics of the system. They're not able to really stoke change and break out of that fall model for television. And I think that this summer we really saw with so many hits airing during the summer, whether it be on cable with Duck Dynasty or shows like Breaking Bad debuting on AMC during summer. This is a part of the market that the broadcast networks have not really tapped into yet.
Here's the question that I want to ask. Here's the question I want to ask, which is, networks say they're frustrated with this fall model. The real question will be, are they going to put their money where their mouth is and show patience? Because when you talk to network executives privately, they say, we know we have to be patient. We know it takes time for people to find shows. We know we can't just keep canceling shows after four episodes. And a lot of them are saying, watch, we're going to be patient. Well, let's see what they do. They say that every year, but it's more now than ever. And some are starting to show that in practice. Fox gave Ben and Kate a full 13 episodes to fail. But it also brought back the Mindy Project, which lost about 30% of its lead-in from New Girl and never really did much in terms of the ratings. But they believed in it creatively. They liked the buzz about it. They said, you know what? Rather than putting on yet another comedy that fails, let's be patient. Are they going to continue to do that? And are other networks going to join them? NBC brought back Hannibal and it was barely registering on the Nielsen meter. AJ's right. Breaking out of this fall paradigm is something that has to happen. But for that to occur, they need to be patient and just use this as a launching pad rather than everything has to happen in 3 months.
Well, AJ, you mentioned Kevin Riley, who's the chairman of entertainment at Fox. And, he's of course, experimenting with all sorts of different models, 13 episodes, 15 episodes, obviously famously the following last year, was picked up 15 episodes because that's what the star, Kevin Bacon, wanted. So we are seeing more of these cable sort of models coming to broadcast. You know, the big question, of course, is how do you make money on these shows if you can never actually syndicate them? And of course, then the other answer is, well, nothing can be syndicated anymore because the syndication market's just not what it used to be. But is the hope, and do you think you'll see more cable-style shows coming to the broadcast networks? And is that how broadcast will be saved, is basically to start emulating cable even more?
I mean, don't you guys think, though, that Under the Dome was a step forward in terms of not only breaking out of this real emphasis on fall and mid-season because you had this big summer launch, but also something that had a shorter episode order? It was, initially conveyed as being a limited series. It was something that was kind of unique done in the summer season that actually had success on CBS. We saw CBS just renewed the deal with Amazon to push those episodes on Amazon next season when Under the Dome returns during summer. So I think that Under the Dome is one of the first examples of bringing that sort of cable model of programming over into the broadcast sector. And you're seeing some success with it.
Yeah, let's talk about that Amazon deal a little bit more. AJ, explain what that deal is, because there's some controversy. Just the other day, the head of FX, John Landgraf, actually criticized Moonves, Leslie Moonves, and CBS for doing an Amazon deal, saying that actually sort of makes broadcast less valuable. Explain to our listeners just what that deal is.
Well, Joe, I think I know, Joe, you've done a lot of coverage on this Amazon deal, so maybe you can fill in the gaps that I have in this. But essentially, a lot of the funding for Under the Dome comes from this deal struck with Amazon, where episodes were available of Under the Dome almost immediately afterwards on Amazon. So instead of having to rely so heavily on ad dollars and network funding for a show, you can go to this third party, strike a deal with them in order for not only your show to get more play on a different platform and potentially build an audience over there, but also provide some cash flow into it.
Well, what it really was, I'd say, is it was a dose of liquid courage for CBS, because what it did was it took the risk out of the project. You know, the reason networks don't try a lot of things in the summer anymore is because they've done it before and most of it fails. They forget the shows that succeed, like Northern Exposure and Melrose Place, but there were a lot that failed. So what having that Amazon money on the table right from the start did was allow CBS to say, you know what, even if this fails, we're going to be okay, because it's true. The combination of the money from Amazon as well as international revenue that CBS got from selling the show overseas made it in profit for CBS even before a single advertisement was sold. So it was a smart thing. What the networks need to do is continue doing deals like that, but also just demonstrate more courage and take chances. They talk about, well, summer shows don't always work because we tried a few and they failed. Well, that's like saying, well, we're just going to launch one or two new shows in the fall and see if anything works. The track record, the level of success for network shows is never more than about 25%. But if you limit the number of chances, you're going to get failure. And the networks just need to step that up. And I think we're saying they're going to next year. CBS, and Fox will all have lots of original programming that's scripted next season.
But Joe, is the genie out of the bottle? If you start streaming these shows 4 days after they air on Amazon, aren't you telling the audience, you know what, you don't need to watch this show on CBS?
You know what? You don't need, but that's, you know, and maybe we ought to control and make sure people can't copy MP3s and that'll save the music business. The genie is out of the bottle. People want the ability to watch TV when they want to watch. If you're under 30 years old or under 25 years old, you barely even know an era as an adult where you can't watch TV whenever the heck you want. You want to be able to go to iTunes, you want to be able to go to, God forbid, a torrent stream and get it that way. The networks have to adjust to the fact that, you know, the model of you have to watch when we tell you to is dead, period.
Here's the question, though, that I think that Mike is getting at is, by putting these episodes so soon on Amazon after they air on CBS, are you in a way cannibalizing your on-air rating by allowing people to wait a few days and just watch it on Amazon? But if this deal struck with Amazon is providing cash flow into CBS, then does that ultimately hurt their bottom line if they're cannibalizing their on-air rating with this streaming service?
Well, it's fine because it's the summer, and it's a summer play. It's 13 episodes, and that's how CBS justifies it to themselves. But if this becomes sort of more the norm, and suddenly you start to see more shows, say, in the fall do this, then you are potentially completely changing the habits of the audience. And that's sort of the next topic that we want to get to. But let's get back to fall real quick, and I want to hear from both of you guys what's going to work. Do you have have a show or two that you feel confident about. AJ, is there anything you're excited about?
Yeah, like I said, I think that the Michael J. Fox show, by virtue of him having a comeback and his name and also the content, how he's really balancing his issues with Parkinson's with a comedic edge, it shows a lot of promise. I thought that the family chemistry in the pilot was really solid. I'll be interested to see how Dad's performs on Fox, given the controversy surrounding all of the racial humor on the show.
Right. The critics are not a fan of Dad's because there is some really edgy stuff in that that first episode, including things that could be sort of construed as
and
being offensive.
I don't know if you saw, but they actually have an ad where they compare the critical response on screen with little text blurbs to the response of live studio audience members exiting a taping. So, you know, you'll have a comment from, say, BuzzFeed saying that it's horrific or something like that. And then they'll cut to an audience member coming on saying, I don't know how you can't find this to be hilarious.
So who are you going to trust, a critic or Joe Sixpack?
Well, also, I wonder if those studio audience members were at a taping of something other than the pilot. And if they are seeing perhaps a softer version of that humor.
And they may have served alcohol at that.
I was just going to say, how much beer was served at the screen?
Yeah.
The show that I'm actually looking forward to, guys, that I actually think is going to be a surprise success, maybe not a smash hit, because I don't think there are going to be any smash hits, except maybe S.H.I.E.L.D. We can talk about that later, is Ironside on NBC.
No.
And the reason I say that is because NBC with that show is running in the exact opposite direction of all the other networks this fall. Everyone else is going for high concept. Everyone else is going for sci-fi or outlandish or thriller or cable drama. They're doing an old-fashioned procedural. They're doing it with a star, Blair Underwood, who I think has great appeal, especially to older people. Chicago Fire did surprising to some ladies. And I think it's a well-done procedural. It's interesting. It glorifies police brutality, which is not the best thing in the world. But it's an interesting show,
thing.
And I think it's going to be a surprise how well that show does.
Oh, Joe, you're getting older. What is happening to you? This is suddenly your kind of show now? Well,
I love procedurals, and I'm like practically 12 years old.
Joe brought up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or I'm sorry, Marvel's Agent of S period.
No,
H period.
Actually, Mike, it's actually ABC's presents Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes,
let's get it right.
Stop it.
Of course, Joss Whedon comes back to television, but more importantly, this is what paid for that big acquisition of Marvel by Disney, the first big Marvel television show in prime time. And ABC's got it, and they're expecting a lot. What do you guys make of it?
It's a huge property, but at the same time, that's a heavily female-skewing broadcast network. And this is their opportunity to really bring in some male demographics, some young male demographics, even though, you know, ABC will be very quick to say this is a, quote, four-quadrant show, meaning that it crosses male and female demographics in both young and old demos.
Right, even brings in the kids.
But, so. I mean, you know, this is the network that has brought you Desperate Housewives, Scandal, Betrayal, and Grey's Anatomy. So to bring something that's more male skewing to the network, I think could be a real get for them.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of humor to this show, and obviously it contains a fan favorite character, the character of Coulson, played by Clark Gregg, and it has that signature Joss Whedon humor, so there isn't much of a barrier to entry. You know, it could appeal to females, but it is a very different kind of show for ABC. I mean, Joe, what do you think? Did you like it?
I like the show, and I think it will open huge. Not so sure how it's going to do over the long run, you know, and I'm curious to see exactly how much ABC is paying per episode for this. It really is going to be how well they can execute the show. And it's not about superheroes. That's the thing, which is creatively maybe an interesting choice. But after a while, viewers might say, wait a second, where are the superheroes? Are they here? Is it just going to be thrown in like sort of the Monster of the Week episodes on X-Files?
Absolutely, Joe. I mean, that is at the end of the day, it breaks down to being a procedural. It's a case of the week type show. So, you know, how much of the shine factor wears off when you are brought back into the Marvel Universe on TV and it ends up being a case of the week?
Well, especially when it's not the top shelf Marvel Universe. So people are going to tune in. I think the joke's going to be, oh, hey, you just missed Iron Man. He was here 10 minutes ago.
And I also feel like this is also where networks keep getting it wrong in 2013. People today want shows that they have to see, that they have to see to together that leave them excited, that leave them thrilled, and they want them in short bursts. Imagine how great it might have been if ABC had said, we know we've got a huge franchise here. We are only going to do 13 episodes the first season of this. They're going to run consecutively. We're going to make an event. You have to watch this show. It's must-see TV. You will commit 3 months of your life to it, and you will enjoy it.
Well, we want to know what you're watching this fall. Are you excited about Robin Williams coming back to television? And what you think of the traditional fall TV model? Check out our website, kcrw.com/thebusiness. Let's move on. Joe mentioned must-see TV. I don't even know if must-see TV still exists anymore. I mean, AJ, how do you watch TV now? And how do you think people are watching TV now?
I watch must-see-it-later TV. That's what I do.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that grew up in a way with streaming. It was introduced to me when I was in college, and I was like, oh, well, this is a convenient way for me to watch TV so long as I don't need to deal with the buffering all the time. Once the buffering was fixed, it was like smooth sailing from then on out. But for example, you know, I was watching Million Second Quiz this week, NBC's live event programming, their huge ambitious game show strip.
Live from New York, the big Ryan Seacrest game show.
And I was like, God bless it. I have to go to dinner several times this week. And I'm supposed to watch this live and play the game while I'm watching it live. And I thought, I just want to DVR this. I just want to watch it on demand. Why can't I do that? Of course I could, but it was going to detract from my viewing experience. But, you know, I always have something that I'm binging in the background, as I say. I just started Derek on Netflix, so I'll chip away at that. When I watch a show on MTV, I usually watch it the next day online at my own convenience. So while I do still believe in the network TV model of live viewership with certain shows that I really want to be in the conversation with, I have absolutely no problem waiting several days to watch something.
Well, and I think that's the problem that the networks are fearing now is that, you know, especially this year with the fall coming up again, people are, you know, they're going to DVR a lot of shows, but then they may sit on them. They may wait and see, hey, what's the buzz? Or is this show actually going to survive before I bother actually checking it out? And then they're willing to binge later on, stack it up. But you know, I think the network executives are kind of ambivalent about the direction that viewership is heading.
You know, it used to be that network executives said to me, and probably you, Mike, and AJ, you know, we know what a show is going to be after 2 or 3 weeks. We know if it's a hit or a miss. And they still, to some degree, believe this. And that is silly in this age where Breaking Bad can premiere years ago or 5 years ago at under 1 million viewers or around 1 million viewers and can now do over 5 million viewers, where Walking Dead keeps getting bigger every year. A Scandal as recently as last year though it had a perfect lead-in with Grey's Anatomy from the same producer, Shonda Rhimes, perfectly matched, even her fans didn't immediately say, I'm going to embrace this. It took buzz, it took Twitter, took people waiting.
Yeah, well, let's talk about audiences. And first off, are viewership changes sort of killing this business? I mean, shouldn't we put some of the blame on, you know, what we've allowed viewers to do and the
No,
you don't think? I mean,
no, I think TV has it's never been a better time to watch and love television because there is so much, perhaps too much, good content out there. And we have, and see, the thing is, networks need to start thinking about all of their shows not as things to fill time slots, but as assets they can create and build and get people to. I just discovered a couple weeks ago my new favorite comedy, maybe of all time, but probably just in the top five, really. It's a show called Portlandia that's been on the air for 3 years that is targeted for someone like me that I should totally have watched, that people sort of said, yeah, you should watch the show, and yeah, I like that sort of humor. I just never got around to it.
Yeah,
I have Netflix Instant now, and I'm binging it and watching a couple episodes every other day, and I absolutely love it. And it's like, and you know what? IFC is getting paid for that because they sold to Netflix. There are different ways to make money. It's not as easy as it used to be. You know, it's also not unlike the music business, okay? Music business crashed, right? They crashed when everyone could download the music, and a lot of people did it for free, and everything became cheap. They still make a lot of money from selling albums, but artists now, to survive, need to sell concert tickets, they need to sell t-shirts, they need to sell VIP fan club experiences. Well, that's what network TV is, and even cable TV is going to have to do because their ratings are going down too. It's not just the networks. They need to find new ways to monetize, and they will.
I think that we are seeing some networks show hints of patience. For example, mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the CW with the Carrie Diaries. You know, they moved that to the Friday night time slot. Ratings were dipping. It wasn't looking good. But they ended up renewing it for a second season. You know, this is a potentially valuable property that they have. And Mark Pedowitz even said, you know, we're hoping that people discover this show on Netflix, that they catch up on the DVDs, right. that we build a fan base for this show when it's off the air in terms of new seasons. So there are these little hints of, we'll build a fan base.
Mark Pedowitz knows where his bread is buttered, and his network is owned by two studios. And ultimately, it's a means to an end for these studios. And the big question is, 10 years from now, will there be networks? Maybe there'll be still a CBS out there, but it's going to become even more important to own your own programming, which is why we see, for example, say an FX holding on to even more of its own programming, because at some point, they know people aren't going to be watching It's Always Sunny or Sons of Anarchy right. on the channel. Channel anymore.
Except here's the thing also, I will say this though, as we're talking about this, the fact is there's still right now more money to be made if you can get somebody to watch live that same day, and because they will get the most amount of ad dollars. And you can do that if you make your show really good, really different, and are consistent. That's what Breaking Bad proves. That's what Mad Men, to a lesser degree, proves. That's what Scandal proves. People want to watch that show when it airs Thursday now because it's really good.
That's why everyone's talking about events now. That's why big events are the
big buzzword. But not just events.
We'll see how the 24 reboot does, right?
But I would argue, you know, the networks keep saying words like events and thrilling. Here's what they need to do. They need to make it good. They need to invest in the best possible writers. Give them the time to come up with scripts. It doesn't mean that they're always going to succeed. But if a show is really good, it has a far better chance of working, with the exception of Duck Dynasty, which nothing explains that.
Duck Dynasty is just flat out good programming.
Duck Dynasty is
funny.
It's a comedy. And there's a whole section of the country, Joe, that you're forgetting about.
It's not this section right
All
here.
Right. Well, how do you consume TV? Post a comment right now at kcrw.com/thebusiness. So we're talking about good TV, and there's a lot. There's too much good TV. We always are complaining about Sunday night. Luckily, I now have a DVR that records five things at once, so I can actually record everything that I want to see. But part of the problem
you got
with
the genie.
Yeah, part of the problem with the Emmys now is that there's almost too much good drama and too much good TV on the air, and so as a result, there are more snubs than ever. So coming up this weekend, of course, on CBS, Neil Patrick Harris is hosting the annual Primetime Emmy Awards. I know you guys are excited. We're all going to be backstage sweating
in
our
tuxedos. So excited to sweat on the red carpet.
Tuxedos.
Wow, so excited.
But so, this year, obviously, Netflix joined the ranks of the nominees. First time ever a digital streaming service got a major nomination. Of course, House of Cards nominated for Best Drama. And star Kevin Spacey is nominated for Outstanding Actor. Actor, among others. This is a big deal, granted, but Emmy voters are also, they're a very traditional bunch. Do you think this is the year that we may actually see a breakthrough for digital, or do you think the pioneer is yet to come?
Well, I did a very official poll on my Twitter where I asked people yes. what they thought, and they could reply to me.
And what did your millions of readers?
Yeah, out of my 2,500 followers, follow me, variety_AJM.
Oh, you did not just do that.
But a lot of people were saying that they think that Spacey is a lock for Best Actor.
Well, Spacey actually sort of transcends the whole digital issue because Emmy voters love people from the movies.
Yeah.
They still have this sort of inferiority complex where anyone
straight from the silver screen to the computer screen.
Yep.
Kevin Spacey.
Closer to your EGOT.
Yeah. So Kevin Spacey looks like he's a solid bet for Best Actor. And I mean, he does. He gives a great performance in it. Really strong, especially with those direct-to-camera addresses that I know were very polarizing for some audience members and critics alike. In terms of the drama race, it looks like, a lot of people are saying it's neck and neck between Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones. Breaking Bad, especially because of the timing, you know, we're coming up on the close of the series altogether with the Emmys. So timing couldn't be better in terms of it being really like a part of the cultural zeitgeist.
Right,
for Emmy
right.
voters.
And that's why I put my money on Breaking Bad. Joe, you got a horse in this fight?
You know, I don't know. I tend to be of the belief that way too much attention, I hate to be the contrarian here, is spent worrying about Emmys. And in some ways, it's a great sign of how great television has become. But it's also a sign, I think, of the main reason we now, it used to be, Mike, you remember this, 10 years ago, people cared about Emmys. They didn't care about Emmys this much. I think it's in part because you were driven by cable networks, which wanted to find legitimacy by having Emmy Awards, and that happened. At this point, you know, it's just this sort of relentless focus. And but I do think, though, that if you're going to have all this Emmy madness and make it really legitimate and actually reward good content, I think it is essential that the TV Academy reinstitutes a best new series category. There was a brief time, I think in the 70s, where that was the case. But I feel that because television is a medium in which shows continue to air for multiple seasons and people get into established habits, and not every Emmy voter actually watches every show. They just vote with what they sort of think they remember. I think a great way to focus energy on all the great new shows that are out there is to have a category for best new series and let that be a category every year that allows the best of what's new to be honored.
Because that's what we need at the Emmys is more categories.
Well, okay,
wait.
Here's my issue with the Emmys. Walking Dead, right?
Well,
Sons of Anarchy, Walking Dead, these are gritty niche shows that are driving huge amounts of viewers to cable. And really, critics like these shows, yet they are not getting any shine in the Emmy nomination. So in a way, you know, Walking Dead may not be the perfect show, but I mean, season one, some of the storylines there, some of the acting there was incredibly strong, yet they have no showing at the Emmy. So what is this award show about?
And that's why a best new show category would be great, because it allows shows like a Mad Men. Mad Men would have easily, I think it actually still won best drama its first season, right?
Well, yeah, and that's why you probably don't need one, is if these shows really rise to the occasion. Usually it's within the first 1 or 2 years that a show gets the lion's share of its Emmys. ER is a good example. Once Upon a Time, early in its run, was getting 20, 22 nominations a year. Toward the end of its run, it was getting 1 or 2. So you know, the new shows are still the hot things of the moment. Look at House of Cards this year. It got nominated. So the bigger question, I think, is, do they need to nominate 10 best, outstanding series opposed to 6?
God, let's hope not.
But there are so many good shows that maybe you do that, but then maybe the Emmy suddenly isn't worth as much. The other question is the Emmy ultimately unfair now? Is there just too much diversity in programming? You've got, high-class quality cable dramas, and so some of the broadcast stuff, like NCIS, that, people love, well-crafted show, it does fine, but it's not a cable-style drama.
It doesn't need an Emmy. An Emmy does.
But it doesn't. But
25 million people a week
watching NCIS.
I love TV's bloopers and practical jokes when it aired in the 80s, and it never won an Emmy. And you know what? Dick Clark was just fine with that. I don't think, and that's what I'm getting at. I think this whole, oh my God, I need to have an Emmy, is something that Hollywood and the TV community needs to stop worrying about. And
well,
yes,
it's
the one
big,
who just suggested a better category, but that's just if you're going to do it, you might as well at least honor what's new and at least
allow those things to
break through.
It's big business now. Not only does it generate a lot of money, the whole machine generates a lot of money.
It does,
but also,
what does it do for viewers? What does it do for viewers?
Well, arguably the buzz that Homeland got for Showtime drove a significant number of new subscribers.
I think ironically, the shows that we see nominated now are these smaller niche shows like a Mad Men, like a Breaking Bad, that actually do need the buzz and do need being Emmy nominated.
You know what?
And now they're
getting
that.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's why you don't need to have Emmys for NCIS. Also, by the way, this is not 1983 where an Emmy award needs to be out there to get people to pay attention to Cheers, right? Where that can drive attention. There's plenty of ways for networks to get buzz. People watched Orphan Black after the fact, mostly because of all the Twitter buzz. AJ, you get your money in part because, and I mean this respectfully, but the trades get a lot of their money and they survive because of that. I'm not against the Emmy machine, but I feel like it's gotten out of control. I think if networks spent even a quarter of the, if they devoted at least a quarter of the resources they now spend on Emmys, on paying more attention to scripts quality, they'd be a lot better off.
And Joe, there goes your HBO Emmy party invite. So sorry about that.
But by the way, here's the thing. I would say this, though, if they really do want to help with the Emmy buzz, because let's face it, ratings for the Emmy broadcast itself have been going way down too. It is not an event for most people. I actually think that there's something else that the TV Academy ought to consider. They need to consider moving the show back to where it was for a few years, which is either May or June. It needs to be at the conclusion of a year of television, not at the beginning of fall when the focus is on so much else in the world, on people just getting back to school and new shows. If we're going to honor the best, why not do it in May or June and just let it be sort of a capper to an entire season of television.
Part of the problem, too, is it's just not an entertaining show because they have to give away 200 awards or 201 if Joe has its way. So we're going to ask you now, will you be watching the Emmys? Do you care? Tell us at kcrw.com/thebusiness. Well, guys, it's come to that time now. We're going to go around the room and let's chat about something that's been heating up your mind. What are you fascinated by this week? AJ, why don't we start with you?
Well, I've been keeping track of Million Second Quiz on NBC. This was a huge, costly game show effort for the network, produced by All3Media. Live strip for 10 days. Game running 24/7, hour-long broadcast, 8 p.m., live from New York every night. And it's kind of tanking, which is unfortunate for me to see as somebody who covers reality TV, because this show was really built within the reality TV industry. Producers across the board were rooting for this to succeed because they knew that if this game show succeeded, it would open the door for so many more formats, so much more risk-taking in the broadcast sector, you know? And you're seeing Million Second Quiz pull 6 million viewers, 5 million viewers. The app crashed when it first launched. The app's working now, but it crashed when it first launched for live syncing with the game. So, you know, it's kind of unfortunate to see Ryan Seacrest, though, doing his hosting duties as always. I don't think there's anything that Seacrest can't host. But, you know, we'll see how it pans out over the next few days. But right now it's a little bit saddening to watch such a great effort in such a great format not really pick up speed with viewers.
And Joe, what's lighting up your fire this week?
Big Brother, the 15th edition of this game, of reality show on CBS, reaches its conclusion this week, and it will be the end of one of the most disappointing seasons of the show yet. I've been a fan of Big Brother since the beginning. It's a wonderful, innovative format where people live 24/7 in a house. It has some very talented producers behind it, but the casting of the show every year in the last few years has continued to decline. Producers have sought out the stupidest, least intelligent, and in some cases, most vile people they can find, thinking that will make great television. But what it really made for was, first, a lot of people with a lot of really awful opinions and a lot of racist mindsets and misogynistic mindsets. And that played out and brought a lot of controversy and shame to the show. And more to the point, it also, because these people are not that intelligent, they really didn't know actually how to play the game, which is all about stabbing people in the back. And while you certainly want people who are out there and interesting in your show, I think that what Big Brother is symptomatic of is reality producers race to the bottom. Rather than embracing interesting concepts, they're embracing wilder and wilder casting. And maybe on some shows a train wreck is fine, but I would hope that what CBS has learned from this season of Big Brother is that train wrecks aren't always the best kind of TV. Unfortunately, the show's ratings were just fine and pretty much level this year. So unfortunately, expect more of the same next year.
And for me, speaking of shows that have undergone so many tweaks in recent years, The Today Show. So once again, the producers and the president of NBC News thinks that she's found the solution to the problem of The Today Show. So they've introduced a new logo, a new couch that happens to be orange, and a new orange room is what they're calling it, tracking social media. And of course, it's hosted by everyone's favorite TV host besides Ryan Seacrest, Mr. Carson Daly, who has now joined the Today Show. So the solution, I suppose, was right in front of our faces all along. But so my favorite part of the announcement this week was the president of NBC News, Deborah Ternus, actually, believe it or not, and I don't know if she checked with her PR team beforehand, but she said the new direction of the Today Show will stress three things: substance, uplift, and connection. And yes, if you take the first letter of each of those words, S-U-C, it sounds like the Today Show is going to suck. Thank you very much. Thanks, Joe.
Domo arigato, Mr. Schneider.
All right, and thanks, AJ.
Anytime, Mike.
TV party tonight! TV party tonight! TV party tonight! TV party tonight! We're gonna have a TV party tonight! All right! We're gonna have a TV party, all right!
And that was Joe Adalian. He's the West Coast editor for New York Magazine's Vulture.com, and he tweets at TVMojo. And that was AJ Marischal, who covers television for Variety, and you can follow her on Twitter at Variety _, don't forget the _, AJM. And I'm Mike Schneider, the Los Angeles bureau chief of TV Guide Magazine, and my Twitter handle is at Franklin Avenue. This has been a special TV Roundtable edition of The Business, produced by Darby Maloney, with production assistance from Melissa Morton. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW. You can find this and other episodes of The Business on iTunes or wherever you download podcasts. You can also listen to us on demand with the KCRW smartphone app. I'm Mike Schneider, and we'll see you again soon. Okay, see you later, RWY.
Because we like you. R-A-D-I-O.